Should you use outcome-based service agreements in your managed services practice? That is today's question on the MSP Zone.
You are entering the MSP Zone, a podcast for the managed services community, covering news, analysis, and interviews from around the globe. Elevate your MSP game by staying in the MSP Zone. And now, your host, Charles Weaver.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the MSP Zone. That is where you are in the MSP Zone. And today we are going to talk about the ever-important question of service agreements, specifically service guarantees. We call this a lot of different things. Some people use SLAs. Some people use service agreements, master service agreements. We're going to unpackage all of that. We're going to make this very, very simple, but most importantly, we're going to get some expert opinion on what these things mean and what you should be doing in your managed services practice related to service guarantees. And joining me again from the great state of Texas, our friend Rob Scott. Rob, welcome.
Thank you, Charlie. Good to be with you.
So, knowing that we've got both veterans and, you know, kind of new, you know, younger generation of MSP business owners and operators out there listening to the program, we're going to kind of do a little delicate balancing act of giving a little bit in the early part of this program. What are some of the basic terms and definitions that we're going to be talking about? Number one, and then move quickly into the practice of contracts within a managed services environment. We will tangentially talk about also cloud or software as a service, which some MSPs are also dabbling into these days, and talk about how those business models interact with the concept of service guarantees. So for those who are uninitiated, Rob, what is the best kind of, you know, layman's definition that you can come up with for an SLA or a service level agreement?
A service level agreement, the best example of it is an uptime guarantee where a hosting company or a provider will say, for example, we offer five nines of availability, an expression of a metric that goes to the service described in an objective way such that if it was not delivered, the customer could theoretically complain about it. In some instances, credits have been issued, you know, credit schemes have been issued for failure to comply with the SLA. So the service level agreement is a contractual arrangement between the service provider and the customer where the service provider makes commitments regarding the service in terms of the objective characteristics such as uptime and availability. And then agrees to provide that level of uptime, and in certain instances, if they don't, to offer some financial credit to the customer as a result.
Okay, so when we say SLA, and sometimes people hear us talking, maybe heard you give a session at MSP World, and you throw out terms like MSA, SLA, are these the same things? Are they different?
They're different. So an MSA is a contract that is generally not related to a specific service, but that describes at a high level the business relationship between the MSP and its customer. Think of it as an account agreement. You know, this is if you set up an account with us and become a customer, these are the general terms that will apply across the board, regardless of what services in particular you acquire or take advantage of.
The generalities of the business relationship, whereas the SLA or the service agreement are the specifics of the services being delivered and consumed. Fair enough.
Well, yes, and there's a subtle nuance there too. So we'll talk in terms of, for example, a managed services agreement or a managed services attachment. And that, to me, is not necessarily a service level agreement. Certainly, the traditional, managed services agreement would not have, for example, penalty provisions or uptime guarantees.
Right.
I don't think that the managed services agreement and the service level agreement are the same, but I do agree that sometimes people use those synonymously, but for me, that is not necessarily an accurate way to describe them.
Okay, so maybe better to say they sometimes can coincide in the same document, but some they don't necessarily coincide. In your usage, they are different and may actually appear in different documents. But the point is that they serve different functions, whether in the same document or separate.
That's correct.
Okay, so if the early stage, web hosting providers in the mid to late 1990s had SLAs, right? Actual uptime guarantees, and we're compressing some, many years of history here. The young MSPs, right? The VARs who transitioned into MSPs, for lack of a better term, across the board, borrowed those SLA concepts and put them into those early managed services agreements. Rob, I know that you saw some of those early on. I mean, what are some of your just random thoughts about those early days when those SLA concepts were kind of seeping their way into the MSP practice?
Well, I think it came from telecom, right? I mean, it's really, these SLAs with uptime guarantees and availability really came from the telecom industry. And, in the early days, a lot of things were just hosting, you set up a server and, it's commercial hosting. And uptime and availability seemed relevant for pure hosting plays. And then, the market evolved to more services based and to be heavily focused on remote monitoring and management. And SLAs don't really, make a ton of sense there unless you're talking about response times. And then the data center became distributed and applications were delivered in different ways. And now MSPs have taken the role of coordinating more other vendors than looking after a self-contained environment. And so, in the modern world, the MSP is not really in control of availability. That's some third party is controlling that.
So it's obviously the remote nature of what MSPs do, and it's always been the main business model of the MSPs is to deliver remote monitoring and management of exactly what you said, Rob, things and objects that are not in their control always. Sometimes they are, but frequently they're not, especially in cloud. Is it accurate to say then that the early stage, you call it telco, web hosting, wherever that came from, those contractual practices kind of went, they came into vogue and then they quickly went out of vogue. And I remember you did some of the early work in this area of getting MSPs to get away from those telco web hosting contracts. So is that an accurate statement that we kind of went through a period of adoption and then quickly went away from kind of SLA themed agreements?
The answer is yes, for a number of reasons. One, the whole nickel and diming of, credits and so forth, really didn't, it was all the stuff that was being tracked and accounted for really didn't, it didn't make a difference from the economics. The concerns that arise from downtime are much broader than just the credits. And so it became clear to everybody that, arguing over credits is not the answer. And there's better ways to spend both parties' time than keeping track of, credits against a service level agreement. And so that and the fact that it became clear and is become increasingly clear that many of the issues affecting, for example, availability or uptime or other issues are not within the control of the MSP. You know, now, you know, you got public cloud, you've got all these different cloud hosters, you got different hardware manufacturers, you got all these different points of failure. And to suggest that the MSP should be contractually warranting that all these things are going to work in a certain way when they have no control, it became evident to everybody that that made no sense.
So, okay. So to give a quick recap for those of you out there trying to make sense of this, right? We had SLAs in the mid to late 90s. You had telco web hosting uptime guarantees, mostly uptime guarantees, not the only example of outcome-based, but that was a fairly common one. And then that adopted its way into the managed services market. And then, you know, Rob, you and well, I'm only aware of you. I'm sure others may have done it, but I'm only aware of your firm's work in this area during those formative years when you were trying to get people in the MSP market to move away from that. Flash forward to today. Is there, you have MSPs who do still what they do today, but they also have MSPs who are practicing more SaaS-based, right? They're offering SaaS-based solutions. Maybe, you know, not reselling, I'm talking about they offer it themselves. Is there any way in which you would contemplate a modern-day MSP incorporating an outcome-based term or section of their agreements in a situation today?
Well, what I would say, Charlie, is that the modern trend is for customers who are requesting something akin to an SLA, that we have developed for our clients service level objectives.
SLOs.
SLOs.
Okay.
So these are not contractual commitments. There's no contractual penalty. This is just a description of the services that you should expect. And if there's a persistent failure of the provider to deliver against those service objectives, most of which are response times by them and things like that, not results, not resolution times, that the customer will have an opportunity to terminate, that such a persistent failure, however defined, to meet those requirements in the service level objectives shall constitute cause for termination under what is an otherwise not cancelable contract without a liquidated damages provision.
Okay. I want to get back to this this SLO concept in a moment, but let me ask you a follow-up question. Are you seeing today any, I'm assuming it would come from customers, any requests or movement towards asking MSPs to provide outcome-based guarantees such as I will not get hacked or hit by ransomware, or I will be not indemnified, they wouldn't use that, but maybe they would. I will not suffer any harm from a ransomware. You will deploy, restore a backup. You will take whatever measures you do as an MSP to make me whole again. Are we seeing that today contractually?
There are customers that ask for that, and incidentally, indirectly, like you say, by saying, the vendor has to agree to certain security policies designed to safeguard the confidentiality of customer information. That customer information goes missing, or there's a ransomware attack or something like that. And I could see how customers would be asking an MSP to take risks associated with that. I will tell you, in my agreements, the customer is agreeing that it's not the MSP's responsibility to remediate, to prevent and or remediate ransomware. And that if there is a ransomware incident, that the customer has the option of paying the MSP its regular hourly rates to deal with remediation, or that the customer pays the ransom.
So
it specifically addresses the concern.
So you're addressing the issue that the MSP is not going to just bundle in with their normal managed services deliverables, forensic cleanup, post breach, time and materials work. You're articulating that out of the managed services offering and saying it is available, but you're going to have to pay extra, basically.
Or pay the ransom.
Or pay the ransom and suffer Department of Treasury, you know, sanctions or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So back to this SLO concept. You're not tying it to a penalty, right? We're not talking about service credits. We're not talking about SLA penalty payments back to the customer. We're talking about defined objectives that if broken or not met systemically, gives the customer the option to terminate. Did I phrase that accurately?
I think that's the modern trend.
And what does that get the customer? I mean, are they getting some?
The customer is leery of signing an agreement that they can't cancel. It's a 3-year agreement. And they're asking themselves, why would I want to cancel? Well, if the service stinks, I'm going to want to cancel. So let me write something in here that, you know, broadly defines the type of service that I think I would be satisfied with. And then if it fails, then I've got a right to get out. Otherwise, you know, I'm stuck in a long-term contract, and the only way to get out is by paying a pretty significant liquidated damages fee or early termination fee.
So Rob, you're trying to keep the teeth intact in a long-term multi-year managed services agreement, but you're also giving a nod to the customer and saying, look, but there is a way out, and the way out is a fairly articulated set of or a specific outcome that is not met, then you can cancel and you're not going to have this penalty. So it's kind of a hybrid, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think that's the modern approach.
What about MSPs who dabble in, and you may have clients like this, I'm certainly aware of MSPs who have a traditional managed services practice, but they also have, you know, maybe a separate or adjoining, SaaS product that they offer. What about those as outcome-based?
When it comes to SaaS, and particularly if the provider is in control of the inputs, namely, you know, it's their application, they develop it, it's not contingent on a bunch of integrations with other third-party apps, and they host it, then I could see more traditional availability, uptime, maintenance window. You know, those are all, I think, reasonable provisions to have in a SaaS agreement, particularly if it's one that has to do with the ability to transact business, you know, e-commerce sites and things that if they go down, the cash register is down.
Right.
I think that when it comes to those types of services, not managed services, but actually application hosting by the vendor who developed the application and is also hosting it in their data center, then I could see those provisions being relevant.
This just came to me, Rob, but so thinking of the traditional SaaS product offerings, that all that makes sense. What about the newer cybersecurity focused as a service products? And I'm thinking specifically of SOC as a service, SIM as a service, things that are. They're not really managed services offerings. I suppose they could have been or may still be in some hands of certain providers, but these are as a service products. Should the MSPs be looking for those types of guarantees? By the way, coming mostly from vendors that we've talked about on this program.
Well, look, I think what you'd see in that situation is the vast majority of the tools are licensed to the MSP. The MSP uses them under license, with a right to use them for customer benefits for which they could charge a fee. The customer really is acquiring no license and or It frequently has no contractual privity with the vendor. And so the issue there is the MSP that's reselling essentially has to get out of the way of the gap between what the vendor is offering and what the client expects. And if you're offering your own SOC as a service, it's important to make sure that it's clear in your agreements, you know, what it is that you're saying the service will do and won't do, and what are the exclusions, and, you know, what happens if something goes wrong. And that's why we have a separate managed security services agreement in our customer stack, because those as a service offerings, particularly when being resold, raise a number of contractual issues that are not, you know, adequately covered in the base agreements.
So it's your contention that right now we are still not in a period where outcome-based guarantees are making their way back into managed services agreements. This is not a practice that is happening. It may be coming as a request from customers, but your response to that, to an MSP facing that customer request, is a concept like a service level objective or something that gives them some tangible guidance, but not what we're looking at as a circa, you know, 1999 telco or web hosting SLA.
That's correct. I would say in the managed services space, that, you know, we're really focused on response times. You know, we're really, in many instances, there's third-party involvement in almost every ticket, and therefore, you know, resolution times can't be promised. When it comes to SaaS, in the context of reselling, the MSP should offer whatever its vendor is offering in terms of a contractual commitment. If it's a description of service or a service commitment from the vendor, that should be, you know, passed along to the customer. It should be passed through. The customer should be expecting nothing more from the MSP than what the MSP is getting on the customer's behalf from the vendor. If you offer your own managed security services and you're not reselling, then it's important to make your terms and conditions maybe better than what the large, you know, channel players have in terms of what you will cover and, you know, make your terms competitive, but be careful to limit your liability and make sure that your risk balancing provisions are appropriate given the nature of the services and the prices being charged.
Well, I really like this SLO, service level objective, concept, because it still encourages multi-year, you know, agreements and all the benefits that for both customer and MSP alike. But it also gives the customers a safety valve, a release valve out of the relationship without, you know, an onerous financial penalty, which has so kind of commonly been associated with these SLAs that I think most MSPs, you know, today don't relish going back to. Rob, so one last quick question on response times. Are you seeing a lot of MSPs wanting to put in outcome guarantees around response time, let's say for tickets or calls or?
Yes, by tier.
By service tier, you're saying?
Yeah. I think it's, as you say, good for the MSP and good for the customer. Because it's something, you know, hey, now we're communicating what it, you know. Are you going to be happy with the service? Well, here's what we think the service is going to look like. If it looks like that, will you be happy? You know, it gives you an objective criteria against which to measure the services as you go forward.
And it allows the MSP to price accordingly and make money accordingly to the severity or the amount of, you know, attention that particular tier wants from the MSP.
You don't want the MSP to be giving, you know, service at the highest tier for stuff that's, you know, not that significant to the customer from a financial perspective. You know, it's not like, you know, the MSP needs to be protected that, you know, their fixed price doesn't get, you know, no margin because the customer, it thinks everything's an emergency.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Well, look, Rob, I appreciate you coming on the program today. This is, it's not an easy topic, and it's especially difficult when you're seeing so many, you know, I call it displacement. There are transferring, you know, SaaS or as a service legal concepts over to the managed services profession. Although they're very similar in many regards in a lot of ways, that's one way in which I think they're really different. And I appreciate you kind of coming on the show and helping clarify those legal distinctions between those two types of agreements.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on with you, Charlie.
Well, folks, that's it. If you haven't already reached out to our friends over at Scott & Scott to get your agreements reviewed or created, if you don't have them, definitely do that. It's well worth it, and it will put you at great ease when it comes to making sure that your managed services or SaaS cloud practice is well secured, at least contractually. And you know, these guys do a great job and continue to service a lot of the MSP Alliance membership all over the place. So do that if you haven't done it already. And until next time, this is Charles Weaver and Rob Scott for the MSP Zone. We will talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a like. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so you'll get notified when future episodes are released. We will see you next time in the MSP Zone.